Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hello, and welcome to a special episode of the Batteries Included podcast. I'm Dominic Ioni, and my co-hosts today are Francie from the Out of Spec podcast and Todd Malogny, senior editor at Inside EVs and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. On today's show, we are pleased to be joined by Desmond Wheatley, CEO of Beam Global. Welcome, everybody. It's great to Hello. Have you, Desmond. Thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks for putting this together, Dominic. I'm excited to speak with Desmond and everyone about Beam.
Yeah, same here. So, all right, Beam Global was founded originally in 2006. And for the most time of that time, it's been known as Envision Solar. I believe I first wrote about the company back in 2008 when it placed a solar installation on the roof of a parking structure at the University of California at San Diego. But the company has really blossomed, though, since that time. So maybe start us out by giving us an overview of what Beam Global does today. I understand you have a number of different verticals and have been acquiring companies to grow your capabilities.
Yeah, that's right, Dominic. And actually, in many ways, that installation at UCSD was quite formative in our decision to take the new direction that we've been pursuing since, frankly, since sort of 2011. Originally, the company was set up, as you pointed out, to do these kind of bespoke installations of solar canopies above parking environments, which at the time, by the way, was a very novel idea. Hardly anybody was doing it. However, there were two things about it which I did not want to take forward when I took the company over in 2011. The first of those was that it was becoming highly commoditized. Lots and lots of companies out there were starting to look at doing solar canopies. Anyone who was in the roofing business or electrical contracting or whatever else who was short of things to do was like, okay, let's throw up solar canopies over parking lots. And by the way, which is I fully support that. I think it's a great use of the parking environment. But the other side of it that was really hard to deal with was just all of the stuff that's inherent with doing a construction project. Any type of construction project, you're talking about permitting, zoning, you're talking about multiple different disciplines, you're prone to weather, you're prone to all sorts of different, output or inputs rather, which are completely out of your control. And when I was looking at the electric vehicle charging landscape at that time, just doing some simple arithmetic, in the United States, 290 million vehicles, all of them are going to be electric in the next couple of decades. Just think of how much charging you're going to need to support that. We had 130 years to put all the gas stations in the ground. We're going to have a couple of decades at best to put all the charging infrastructure, make it available to drivers. And it was pretty clear to me back then that if we were going to continue to go through lengthy construction processes with all of the different things that can hold them up, that we were not going to meet our goals in terms of the massive amount of charging that would need to be deployed. That will certainly still play a big role, but we needed something far faster deployed than that. With that, we came up with a new suite of products which are deployed rapidly without construction, without any electrical work. You don't have to go through any kind of a permitting process. There's no site disruption whatsoever. You never get a utility bill. And then also, very importantly, we continue to charge vehicles during blackouts and brownouts while adding capacity to the grid, but without having to build power stations and transmission and distribution infrastructure. So that was the real direction shift between what the company was originally doing. We rebranded 4 or 5 years ago to Beam Global because the name we feel is much more descriptive of everything that we're trying to get done rather than just the very narrow solar part of the business that we had originally been involved in. Now we use any renewable source to provide power for our products.
Very right interesting.
So, Francie, do you have a question to kick us off with?
Yeah, sure. I was a little bit interested about you, Desmond, because in the EV space, as you described, there's a lot of ways that we're going about charging and there's a lot of pressures on the grid. So trying to navigate that, whether it's through, solar energy or battery energy storage solutions or connecting directly to the grid, what led you to join what is now Beam Global's team to become CEO, and how kind of did your path lead you here? Because, it, you know, I would assume that you think they had something really good going for them and that you wanted to be a part of it.
Yeah, so I'm delighted and confident to report that I am the least interesting aspect of the Beam Global story. And so we can get me out of the way quickly in the beginning. However, how I got involved perhaps is a bit more interesting. I had actually been in the Middle East many years. And you know, if you've spent time in the Middle East, one way or another, you're involved in the energy business, and frankly, not in ways that I'm thrilled about or proud of. In hindsight, when I came back to the US, I was invited by some of the people who were involved in the in sort of investment around Envision Solar at the time to come and help them with the company as we considered a public company platform. I think really the most interesting part of that was this transition from the idea of providing just solar power, which again, not to diminish it in any way, is very important, but the idea of moving to this clean mobility for all, basically. I thought that there was going to be a huge opportunity where the electrification of transportation is concerned. One of my many failings in life is I tend to be a little too enthusiastic about how quickly technology will take off, but I'm much less frequently wrong about it. A little too early to the party, if you like. Now I've got great seats at that party because we're definitely way ahead of anybody else in terms of doing what we're doing. But the key thing was, it was about pace. It was about capacity and about pace. The global, the global grid, but particularly the US grid, magnificent as it is, and it is magnificent, was never designed to replace oil as transportation fuel. And if you just look at the pure joules of energy which are required for transportation and compare them to the joules of energy which are produced by the grid, you will quickly ascertain that there isn't enough energy on the grid to provide for the electrification of transportation by any measure. We needed other solutions, right? This is a massive opportunity. We're going to have a lot of different things to address that delta, if you like. And then we're going to need things that are rapidly deployed as well. So this is the area where we really focus on, was how do we add capacity, but without going through centralized infrastructure, and how do we do it in a really scalable and rapidly growing way? Again, not to displace or replace the grid at all, but to just add all the extra stuff that we're definitely going to need to make a success of this.
So, Tom, you have a question? You're muted still. It's okay.
Sorry about that. Hey, Desmond, thanks for coming on.
So pleasure, Tom.
We get into really what you're doing now. I have a question about the past. So Beam, I remember Beam Charging. Is it the same company as Beam like Charging? They used to install level 2 charging in like parking garages and decks, or is it a different company entirely?
No, I'm afraid. So look, I'll tell you why we like the name Beam so much. Beam of sunshine, beam of energy, the structural beam like a girder. It's a single monosyllabic name that carries a lot of, but it also allows us to do a lot of other stuff. We're really focusing on that intersection of clean energy and transportation. And you're going to see us playing in a lot of different areas. Some of the acquisitions that I've made would lead you to that. But the truth is, it's a great name. It's a great word. And others have used it. And it is true that previously there was a company called Beam who was providing charging in a fairly small way a few years ago. And in fact, I think they were acquired, but no, not the same company.
Okay, cool. I was just curious because I actually had a lot of experience with them. This Beam Charging Network was like the first public charging network in New York City. I live near New York City, and they were on all the parking garages. But quite honestly, the chargers rarely worked. Half the times I showed up, they were decommissioned. And I remember one time I even tweeted about how poor it was. And the CEO, the current CEO of the company, emailed me to like apologize and say, we're working on improving it. So I'm glad that you're not that company continue to grow, because I could tell you that my experience dealing with Beam Charging was miserable. But okay, we'll put that to the side. I'm glad that you're not the same company.
Hey, Tom, can I just, I'm certainly not here to defend any other Beams or anything else like that. But I do want to just say this, just in general for the broader audience stuff, because we're hearing about this a lot, right? I mean, it wasn't just them. we've heard about a lot of, there's been a lot of stuff in the press about lack of reliability of EV chargers and that kind of stuff. And it's a real thing and it needs to be addressed. But I do enjoy reminding people that this is an industry very much in its infancy. The hardware is brand new. The software is brand new. The service provision behind it. It's difficult to do a massive infrastructure rollout in the, you know, to look at this massive country that we're dealing with here. You've got the frozen areas, you've got terribly hot areas, you've got hurricane prone areas and all that sort of stuff. Somehow we've got to deploy infrastructure that solves for everybody everywhere. And again, to go back to the gas station model, if you think about it, 130 years ago, people used to drive around with big jugs on the back of their vehicles and they would go to farms and places and try and beg, borrow and steal gasoline. So the EV charging industry, they're getting a lot of flack right now. And I'm a driver. I'm an early adopter. I've been doing it for 12, 13 years now. I've been through all of the things that you're describing and I get it. It's frustrating, but I would just say, hey, pretty incredible considering how young it is, the level of success that's going on, and it's getting better every single day. So I'm just a shout out for the industry and help people understand how very, very difficult it is to do this. And actually, it's really impressive how well particularly American companies have done.
So and that's a good shout out for the industry. And now I'll shout out for the EV drivers. We don't care that it's hard.
I know.
We don't care about your problems.
I know.
We want to pull up to the charging station, plug in, and get energy. So yeah. Our answer back to that is just make it happen. And if there's unreliability, have a good, robust service system that is out there checking. And I'm not beating you up. I'm not saying, you know, your equipment. I'm just saying the industry in general. I think the companies, and I understand that equipment is new. This is all new technology. But the existing companies have failed miserably in maintaining it, in rolling trucks when a charger's down, in being responsive when people, you know, post on their site, you know, this charger's not working. So I get it. And you're right. It is hard. And I've interviewed people from all the major infrastructure companies. I've talked to their engineers. I know the challenges, but I don't think the companies have done enough to try to keep the chargers working. I think they're more focused on a land grab, on getting units in the ground as fast as possible and not keeping the existing stations functioning. So we can put that to the side for now, but I get your point. It is hard. I understand it, but tell that to the guy and his family when he's on a road trip and he's got a kid sleeping in the back and he pulls up at 11 o'clock at night to a charger and he can't get juice and he can't make the next one. So
I am that guy. Yeah. I am that guy. So yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. And I know how very, very important it is that we solve for this without a doubt.
So now I have a quick question for you, because that was just that was the first thing about, are you the same Beam?
Yeah.
What do you say to the people that talk about how solar electric, let's say like the solar panels, it's not efficient enough. It doesn't produce enough energy to actually be used. You know, those like deployable, portable stations that you have, they only have enough solar panels to maybe charge one EV a day. Right. You know, how do you get over the fact that you need a tremendous amount of panels to produce enough energy to charge multiple electric vehicles?
Well, that's a great question. And it's, as you can no doubt imagine, it's one that we come up against quite a lot. And actually, the answer to it is much deeper than just a technology answer. And it goes back to the previous thing that we were talking about. I think, you know, if I'm going to be critical of the industry, I think there's lots of things that are wrong with the industry. And one of the things that I like least about the EV charging industry is that charging is typically deployed where there is circuit availability. And that's perfectly appropriate, right? You're running a charging company, you've got a spreadsheet that's got, you're trying to keep the cost on one side down as low as possible, and you're trying to get the revenue as high as you can on the other side. So one of the ways that you control costs is you don't dig long trenches and go through big construction projects to deploy EV charging. This is why you, Tom, me, Desmond, and no doubt the others on this call, if you drive electric vehicles as well, have had to become used to charging next to the dumpsters behind a Safeway in some shopping mall, because that's where the input, that's where the circuit comes onto property, and so it makes sense to put the charging cars there. I think that that's terribly inadequate approach to the industry. We've got to be putting charging. It doesn't just need to be reliable, as you said, Tom, but it also needs to be where people want it, not where the grid is easily accessible. And I can tell you that I in my international travels, I've seen some really appalling examples of this. I mean, there have been plenty of locations I've been to globally where, for example, there are EV chargers in pedestrian precincts. Why? Because there was a circuit available there and the company that was hard to do it was just told, put them wherever you can because we need to get X hundreds in there. I've seen EV chargers on the other side of brick walls for the same reasons. Now, our products, when we developed our products, we very specifically started at completely the opposite end of the spectrum. I can remember the first ever meeting we had where we were at the whiteboard and we were saying, what's important about where EV charging's positioned? Everyone's going to say where the grid is, but actually that's not the right answer. The right answer is you put EV charging where consumers want it, where they're going to use it the most. And then the next thing we need to understand is, what do consumers actually do? What kind of charging do they really need? And this comes to your question about the capacity on these units. What we discovered, I'm going to give you three statistics. These are not mine. These are Department of Transportation numbers. The first one is that the average US sedan drives 30.4 miles per day, 30.4 miles per day. By the way, Americans drive about 37 miles per day, but the average sedan drives 30.4. So presumably they're doing some of it in taxis or something. I don't know. Okay, so 30.4 miles per day. The next one that's really useful metric is 8 out of 10, not the average, 80% of commuters require less than 24 miles for their round trip commute. And then the last one I'll give you, which is really important to us because we do so much fleet work, is that most fleet vehicles globally, by the way, drive between 20 and 30 miles per day. Some of the larger federal fleets drive less than 10 miles per day in this country, for example. Now, once you understand that, then we start looking at what we refer to as DRR, or daily range replenishment. We are not interested at all in the empty full scenario, except when we're doing DC fast charging on a highway corridor or somewhere like that. In every other instance, we're interested in what we call DRR, daily range replenishment. And this comes because, and I'm sure you have experienced the same thing, but as an EV driver now for 13 or 14 years, which I, 14 years I am now, what I very quickly discovered was this idea of going somewhere when I'm empty and waiting around until I fill up is a very gas station model. I don't want to do that. I don't care how fast DC fast charging is. I don't want to go somewhere special and wait around until my vehicle's full up, even if it happens in 3 to 5 minutes. I used to do that at the gas station and I hated it. Much more interesting to me and much more convenient in my life is DRR, daily range replenishment, where I refuel my vehicle where I was already going. Now, in my case, I have a luxury of being able to do that at home or at work. But the fact is, once you understand this 30.4 miles per day number, or the other numbers that I gave you, and then you realize that our units will generate and store enough electricity to provide up to 265 driving miles in a day, you can very quickly see that we can provide DRR to multiple fleet vehicles, to multiple American sedans, or to multiple workplace charging type environments where we're dealing with these 24 mile a day commuters. And that's what's really interesting about this. It's not about filling up empty Teslas, although we get that question a lot. My answer is, I don't care. And it's not that I don't care about you Tesla drivers. It's just that we never see you empty and we never have to fill you up to full. What we see you doing is putting 20 or 30 miles in your car. Our product does that quite happily in an hour and a half or so and does it multiple times every day, and that is solving the problem. Perfect is the enemy of good. What we're interested in solving the problem, getting to that reliability that you were talking about, and having charging be ubiquitous so that this range anxiety thing's gone. Your vehicle's always full because when you go to the store, average dwell time in a US supermarket, 47 minutes. In that time, you can pick up half your DRR on one of our units, make one more stop, and you're on your way to do it. And if you'll permit me, I'll give you a brief, what I think is amusing anecdote. We're a publicly traded company, and so I spent a lot of time dealing with Wall Street bankers. And I was explaining DRR to a Wall Street banker the other day. Now, this is a drill baby drill guy. He thinks that electric vehicles are going to destroy the planet in his strange warped way of looking at things. But anyway, he started shouting at me and saying, are you telling me I need to go to the store to fill my car up in future? And I said, do you go to the store anyway? And he said, yes. And I said, well, then I'm not telling you you need to go there to fuel your car. I'm just saying that while you're there, you could fuel your car. Wouldn't that be a lot better than going to a gas station afterwards? So DRR is the answer, and we can do an awful lot of it with our products.
So I just put up this picture on the screen here, and I think that's displaying right. So this, I believe, is the EV ARC. Is that right?
Yes, EV ARC, a not very helpful acronym, Electric Vehicle Autonomous Renewable Charger. And of course, underline the word there, autonomous.
Okay. So is this the main product of your company?
Without a doubt. It's where the great majority of our revenues are derived, better than 50% of it from fleet and the other 50% corporate type deployments.
Okay. So, and these can be installed quickly, as you're saying, with there's no grid connection with these. So there's battery storage, I take it?
Yeah. So just quickly on the speed of deployment, let me give you a couple of numbers there as well. New York City, our largest municipal customer, Tom, you're in that neighborhood. It takes an average of 2 years to go through the process of planning, permitting, engineering, construction, electrical work, and everything else like that to put a grid-tied charger in a spot. That's where, as I said earlier, we're going to lose the war if we carry on with siege mentality like that. That 2 year process we do in under 1 hour.
Okay,
that's the differentiator. And yes, that's because we don't connect to the grid, and because it's hard to see in this photograph here. But if you look at those units, they're on a kind of a light gray. There's something light gray underneath them. Right. This is the engineered ballast and traction pad, and it's what I unkindly refer to as the dumbest and the smartest part of the invention, because that is a major part of our patent, and it's that base, that engineered ballast and traction pad. It's not flat; it's got a camber in it, and it's highly engineered, and it's giving that unit stability so that it can withstand. We have an independent stamp for 160 mile per hour winds, but have in fact survived hurricane force category 5, 185 mile an hour winds. It's flood proof to 9 feet. There's just no other piece of electrical infrastructure out there that you can say that about, and we will survive those. Anything over 9 feet, we got bigger things to worry about, but right. we continue to operate. And yes, that base pad is what's giving that stability, so we don't have to do any site preparation. No foundation work, no gluing, no bolting, nothing. We just bring it in, drop it off, drive away, and it's ready to operate, ready to charge a car. Unlike children's presents at Christmas time, we deliver with full batteries.
All right. And batteries included. So how many batteries are included in each of these? Like how
generally around 40 kilowatt hours. And so the product's very, very, it's heavily engineered by people who are much cleverer than I am to balance generation, load, and storage. And that is a constant cycle, by the way. The system's intelligent enough to charge entirely from batteries, obviously at nighttime when there is no sun, entirely from solar when we've got pure solar, and then sometimes a combination of solar and battery. All of those things are feeding into that charger. And by the way, one other thing, it's also grid connectable. So we can put power onto the grid or take power off the grid if that suits our customers. It just doesn't need to.
Right. Okay. That's handy. One other question about the product real quick for me. Sorry, guys. I'm just curious about how much energy the solar panels feed into the system on a good day.
It's about a 4.5 kilowatt array, and it has our proprietary and patented tracking solution, which gives us about 25% more electricity than a fixed array. How do we know? We've tested it. It's really simple. We just orient them south-facing, turn the tracking off, see how it performs, and then turn the tracking back on, and it's about 25% more. When it's sunny, it has to be said. Tracking clouds doesn't get you anything, but when it's sunny, we get that extra. Now, of course, 25% more electricity means 25% more miles driven by the vehicles that we're fueling, and so that's why it's so important to us.
Interesting.
Definitely. Okay. And so Beam, you all manufacture the solar panels and the whole setup, really the whole arc there, but then the chargers that are actually used, the EVSEs, it seems like the customer can kind of choose which ones are in the unit, right? But do you manufacture EVSEs, or you always partner with like ChargePoint or whoever?
This very much, again, goes back to Tom's opening comments. Tom, I feel in a way you sort of carpeted the route here for almost everything that we're going to talk about. You're absolutely right. We do not make an EV charger, nor do we offer e-charging services. And that was a very deliberate election on my part when I was growing the company, because I had no idea who was going to do well and who was going to do poorly in that space. I didn't know which business model was going to float to the surface. I didn't know whose hardware was going to do well or anything else. However, what do all EV charging companies have in common? They all need a mounting asset and a source of electricity. So what I did is I decided to focus all of our efforts on producing something that all EV charging companies would need, regardless of their business model or technology. And by the way, that goes down to when we move, as I hope we do, to wireless charging. We're patent pending now on a wireless EV arc, so you don't even need to plug the vehicle in, which is another thing I'd like to see the end of, and I'm sure consumers will demand it down the road. But again, we don't care about that. What we care about is providing a source of electricity without having to do construction work, without getting a utility bill, and without being prone to blackouts or brownouts or vulnerable to them, which is, by the way, an undervalued vulnerability, in my opinion. That's a let's say that's going to be the next big thing that we're all going to have to really start thinking about.
Mm-hmm. And go ahead, Tom.
So two quick questions. How do customers pay to use the stations? And is there like a limit on what somebody can use? Because, you know, I know you talked about the daily, you know, recharging limits or how much each vehicle. And if everybody was kind enough to share and just use enough to get them home, that's one thing. But I can see the people pulling up and just emptying your battery, just sitting in there and drawing it. Is that allowed? You know, and how do they pay for it?
Not only is it allowed, but it does happen, Tom. You're quite right. We do get that. Actually, so I'll give you a couple of scenarios which are sort of most frustrating for us, if you like. But I want to answer your question first. Your question about how do people pay for it is entirely in the hands of our customers. We have no dog in that fight. So what ends up happening, basically, customers come to us and they fill a couple of different buckets. Some customers come to us and they already know what charging network they want to be on and what kind of EV charging they want to offer. Francie, you mentioned ChargePoint. We do a lot of ChargePoint. We do Blink, we do Enel, we do Electrify America, we do all of them. So somebody, a ChargePoint customer will come to us and say, hey, I've got X number of ChargePoint chargers. I need you to add another 50 of them or something like that. We'll say, okay, we'll put 2 ChargePoint chargers per unit and we can ship those things out. Now that customer at that time is going to decide whether they bill for it, whether they put access control on it, whatever else they want to do. It's entirely in their hands, not in ours at all. And similarly, Tom, that customer might also elect to limit the amount of charge that they provide. So for example, in workplace charging, we think it's absolutely appropriate and sensible even to limit what people can bring in. Most employers are not trying to replace their employees' entire fuel bill. They're right. Just trying to make it possible to commute to and from the office. That seems very reasonable to me. And so one of the easiest ways by far to do that is just to limit the amount of time you can be plugged in and charging. It's an easy technology thing for us to do. We can either do it with a smart charger or we can just make the EV ARC stop charging after 2 hours, for example, at which point they've received their entire daily range replenishment. We feel that that's more than reasonable. So do our customers often. But to your point about, do people just show up and exhaust the things? This is, you'll hear this over and over again, and it's absolutely true. Most things in life are really not technology problems. They're mostly behavior problems, right? You're trying to solve for behavior. And when you're talking about consumers, shifting consumer behavior is very, very difficult, particularly when they've been trained to do something for their entire lives and for several generations, in fact. We have all been trained to go as infrequently as possible to go to the gas station. Why? Because it's a horrible experience, right? They put what they call convenience stores in a gas station. What they mean is inconvenienced. You have been inconvenienced by coming here, so why don't you come in and buy some more poison to put inside your body while you put some poison in your tank? And I'm probably going to get sued for all these comments, but nevertheless, there's nothing convenient at all about going to the gas station. But people have become so used to it that they actually do view it as convenient. They, you know, there's gas stations everywhere. There's one on every corner, you know, so it's really convenient. We don't think so. We think that's an incredibly inconvenient way of behaving. And what we really think that the right way to address this is to have ubiquitous charting, as I say, where you can do your DRR everywhere. But some of our customers have become so used to this that even when we tell them, hey, plug that car in every day, and frankly, the auto manufacturer is not helping us with this either, where they're selling these cars with that have, you know, range that's much greater than people's DRR requirements. And they're saying, hey, you don't need to plug it in, but once every 10 days or something, as though that's a benefit. Terrible thing to do. But that we do end up with customers like that. So they'll bring a Chevy Bolt, for example, got 260 mile range, 60 kilowatt hour battery, and they'll plug it in from empty and fill it up. And then they got another one right behind it. That's not a useful way for using our product. If they'd have just plugged it in every day, they'd have always had all the range that they needed for multiple vehicles. So we do have that, but it's more about education than anything else that we're having to sort out.
So are these chargers generally AC chargers, level 2?
You know, yes. So I said that earlier on that we would never get into the charger business. At the same time, there are lots of opportunities for improvement around here. And again, going back to Tom's points, but I'll give you one other one. At the moment, we take sunlight and convert it into DC electricity. We then store that DC electricity in batteries. We then convert that DC electricity into AC to run a level 2 charger or a DC fast charger. I'll come back to that in a second. Mm-hmm. That when it's a level 2 charger, that vehicle then goes into that AC then goes into the vehicle where it's then converted back to DC. where in the case of a so-called DC fast charger, they're anything but, you're actually putting AC into them. It's then converting it into DC, and there's a lot of heat and everything generated and noise and stuff, and then that goes into the vehicle. All of this is very, very wasteful. An all DC route would make a lot more sense, but of course no one's going to make an all DC charger because we live in an AC world. You've got to plug them in to that. Don't be surprised to see Beam at some point in the future having an all DC route, but I still think it's unlikely that we'd be in the charging business when we did that. We would just make that available to all the other wonderful companies out there who are putting the back ends together and all that sort of stuff.
Okay.
Speaking of what you're, do you have something? I'll let you go, Dom. But well, I'm curious about the other part of Beam and your recent acquisition of the AllCell batteries.
Right.
So in terms of, you were saying offering, you know, you might offer DC fast charging one day, who knows, or DC charging. Then, I was curious about one, that acquisition in general, but also why you would choose to do that, and also where the value proposition comes in for what you're doing. And also, it seems to be very customizable from what I could tell from your website, which I thought was interesting too. So I would love to get some insight into what Beam is doing in that, because that's a whole nother project to take on from what you're doing.
Yes. So lots of answers to that question. Again, just let's start at the high level here. Intersection, nexus of clean energy and transportation, you're going to see us playing there. At the moment, mostly what we're doing is renewably energized, rapidly deployed EV charging infrastructure. But this is merely the first step on a ladder, which is so tall, I can't see the top of it. I mean, this is a massive, everything will be electric. And that's a really good news thing for the planet, for the economy, for geopolitics. Again, I spent a lot of time in the Middle East. I know the real value of a barrel of oil, and it's not measured in dollars. So there's a lot of reasons that it's great that everything's going to become electric. Not just electric, though, but increasingly untethered. If you think about most of the electrical appliances we used to plug in and drag extension cords around and all that sort of stuff, most of those now are untethered. Why? Because of battery technology. I made that acquisition largely because I was concerned about supply chain at the time when I made it, which is I made the acquisition in 2020, I think, in the third quarter of 2021. It started to look like we might run out of batteries for our products into 2021. Now, as a publicly traded company, going to Wall Street and saying, hey, we're doing great, but we're not selling anything because we can't buy any batteries, it's not a very good excuse. You don't get very far with that, right? So I acquired that company largely to defend our supply chain. I'd been using their technology for 10 years. We knew how reliable it was. We knew how well it worked. All the technology due diligence was behind us. It's just a matter of whether or not we could come to an arrangement with the seller, which we did. I also did it for margin recapture. We had been consuming other people's batteries for a long time. Batteries are about 30% of the cost of our product. You can imagine the margin impact there for us. But actually, the sort of longer term, less prosaic, less immediate benefits were that I love the space. I happen to believe, and again, brief anecdote, I was in Germany several months ago, several months before I made the acquisition, and late at night, went to the hotel bar to get some dinner, which is not something I like to do, but I had no other choices at the time, and I ordered from a human being, but a robot brought me my bloody dinner. I was sitting at my table and a robot came up with my dinner on it, and that sounds kind of kitschy, but I tell you what, I looked at that thing and I thought, behold the future. You're going to see robotic devices in every walk of life doing all sorts of menial tasks that human beings don't want to do anymore. That's a great thing if we can figure out the economy around that. And every one of them has something in common. They've got batteries inside them, and those batteries need to be safely and rapidly recharged. And the technology that I bought, this thermal management, passive thermal management, was what enables exactly that sort of thing. And I just love it. Robots, whether they're in the air, underwater, or in your house or wherever else, we're putting batteries into all of those things. I love that business across the board. So we're growing both sides of it. Internally, producing a lot more batteries for ourselves. We're producing 10 times more kilowatt hours of batteries today than we were the month before I acquired that company. And the demand has gone up, our own internal demand, but also we're selling to all these other medical devices, robots, and all sorts of other things, as I say. So I love that business. And then the other acquisition we just made is in Europe for a completely different reason, but I'll get to that if you want to ask me about it.
Okay, let's ask you about that. I started to see that acquisition. You have a video, I believe, on the website about the live stream from that event. So what kind of company was that?
Yeah, so we are not as yet in Europe, or we were not as yet in Europe. And I've been looking for international expansion for some time because our products don't care where they are in the world. If they can see the sky or get some wind on them or whatever, we don't care about anything else. That's another great benefit of not connecting to the local infrastructure. Europe is far and away a larger market than the United States for electrification of transportation. I mean, the US has 290 million vehicles in it. Europe has about 405 million. China, 319 million. So it's the biggest market by far. Europeans are very aggressive about electrifying transportation. They've passed a law outlawing the sale of all but zero emission vehicles in 2035. California's, of course, followed suit, and so have dozens of other, well, not dozens, I exaggerate, but about a dozen other states are following suit. So that's a great news thing for us. They're also very, very keen on getting to net zero where energy infrastructure is concerned. In fact, they have a commitment for net zero by 2050. It's more complicated to dig up the streets and dig trenches in Europe. Where I come from in Edinburgh, you dig down 6 inches, you've gone back 300 years in history. You never know what you're going to hit. You know, it's not like being out here in California. And then finally, actually, Mr. Putin has made it a more compelling market for us as well, because the Europeans are now feeling less secure about their electrical infrastructure than at any time in their history. And again, our products are rapidly deployed, scale up, and don't rely on the grid. So we're giving them energy security and everything else while we're at it. By the way, I'm not a supporter of what Mr. Putin has done, but if it helps our business, I suppose that's one tiny, tiny silver lining to a horribly large, dark cloud.
So I had to giggle there. You said Mr. Putin. I thought you were talking about Justin Trudeau for a moment, because of the land of poutine. It's a food thing. It's a French rice covered in gravy. It's Canadian. Anyway.
No. Different. No, I'm talking about the one that runs Russia.
Right, right. Big difference. Right. All right. So I think we're kind of right up against our time. Man, there's so much more to kind of like to talk about, but where can...
Well, John, before we go, if we are leaving, I have to at least ask one question. Desmond, you have to give us some kind of a price range, or what do the ARCs cost?
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure absolutely. People are really curious about that.
Yeah. So the ARC starts at just under $64,000. And that's all in. So what's really important to know is that we have something in the order of 1,400 deployments across the country, with as many as 6 chargers per unit on them. So multiply that out by the number of plugs. I think we're in 33 states, the harshest environments you can possibly imagine. But here's the key thing to understand. While it's possible to install a charger for less than that, no question about it, in all the locations where we're deployed, and this goes back to putting charging where people need it rather than where the grid is existent, in all the locations where we're deployed, without materially, there'll be some exceptions to this, but materially, all of the locations where we're deployed, the price of our unit is lower than the avoided cost of construction and electrical work to deliver a circuit to the locations where our units are deployed. And that is a very important thing to understand about us. Thereafter, there's no unit of energy cost, right? Because you don't have to amortize the life that's banned the product across kilowatt hours or anything else like that. You save money day one by not digging that trench, pouring that concrete, doing the electrical upgrades and everything. And so then you would say, okay, well, that sounds like a terrible niche-y thing, right? How many of those locations could there possibly be? And what I'm going to say to you is, stay tuned. What's happening at the moment is all the low-hanging fruit locations are being plucked. You think about any property, you know, it's got 2 or 3 parking spaces where there's a close electrical circuit, drill a hole in a wall, run the wire through and all that sort of stuff. But then next time you want to add 10 or 15 more chargers, which you're going to without a question, mm-hmm. Now it's dig the trenches, do the electrical upgrades, do all the other things. And then you start bouncing up against capacity on your property, then substation capacity, then regional capacity, then national capacity. All of those things are incredibly expensive and hard to solve for. Our prices will never get higher. Our cost structure will only get lower the more and more we produce. And so at the end of the day, this comes back a little bit to what we're talking about earlier with business models and everything else. I also think the business model is kind of broken. And one of the things I love about EV charging, as opposed to the typical fueling that we've been doing, is for the last 100 plus years, we've had diverse fuel types, but the same fuel transaction every time. Right, you're putting diesel in trucks, gasoline in motorcycles and cars, you're putting bunker oil in ships, you're kerosene in airplanes. But in every instance, unit of energy goes into a storage tank and you part with cash. Now, we're moving away from that to where you've got a single source of fuel, electrons, But I think you're going to see the most fantastically diverse business models around this. If you're an Amazon Prime member, can you get free charging here? If you own an F-150, can you have charging for your life with your pickup truck or whatever? You're just going to see so many fantastically diverse and innovative business models moving into the future. And for us, because we have no unit cost of energy, that puts us in a position where we can take advantage of those business models in a way I think that no one else can, because we don't have to worry about utility bill.
And so really quickly, at the risk of going a little bit too long, I understand you have a media component to the company now. So is that going to be like advertising as a way of bringing another revenue stream?
Perhaps not advertising, but Okay. Yes, using the platform as a means to monetize the infrastructure, which does not involve this kind of terribly boring and last century business model, which is cash per unit of energy. I really think that that's kind of outdated. And think about it. There are lots of proxies for this. When Wi-Fi first came out, it was expensive and difficult to connect to, and you paid for bytes and bits and all sorts of other stuff like that. Right now, it's pretty much free wherever you go. It's fast and more or less ubiquitous. Why? Because the businesses that offer it are monetizing that infrastructure in much more interesting ways. Okay. And so I think you're going to see charging evolving in that way in the future. And I'm looking forward to the day where cash per unit of energy, it'll still happen in certain places. Don't get me wrong, especially corridor type charging and things like that. I think you'll pay a premium. And so you should, for the convenience and the expense of the infrastructure. But the great majority of charging, which is that 30.4 miles per day, is going to come at you in a whole host of different and much more interesting and innovative business models, which is exciting and very much what America's good at, by the way. Americans are great innovators, and we have fantastically efficient capital markets. We are perfectly primed to lead the world in this next fueling era, sort of in the way we did with oil 100 years ago, but now we're going to do it in a much better way, if you ask me.
All right. Tom, anything else, or Francie?
I'm good.
You're good? All right. So, Desmond, where can our viewers or listeners keep up to speed with Beam Global?
Naturally, our website would be a good place to go, beamforall.com, beamforall.com.
All right. And do you have a social media presence, Facebook?
All over the place, yes. And much, much younger and cleverer people than me that are figuring out all of that stuff. But you'll find us all over the social media platform, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, all of the above.
All right. All right, so I guess that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, please leave them below or get in touch with us on the social media platform of your choice. Don't forget, if you like the show, please give us a thumbs up, click subscribe, and tap that bell icon for notifications. Thank you all very much again for joining us, and we'll see you again next time. Ciao.
All the best. Thank you.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.